which English words are really from Latin?
Why do we call the language of the Romans Latin?
And are we getting our Latin plurals wrong?
We'll ponder roots like pendere, examine the contents of contain, and find the road hidden inside impervious in this loquacious episode of Words Unraveled, all about Latin roots and relatives in English.
Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Zafaris, author of etymology books, including Useless Etymology. And today we are headed to Rome for a bit of a Latin lesson.
We were just discussing that actually almost a third of the words in the English language come from Latin, just shy of 30% of them, which is amazing. And there are a multitude of reasons for that. But even words that aren't straight up from Latin come via French from Latin, which is like another 30% of them. And then other words, we just tacked Latin pieces onto old English stems. There's going to be so much talk about here about how we've got so many Latin words and what they mean. But I think we need to get into what Latin even is, don't we?
Right. So we call them Romans, right? And they spoke Latin. But yeah. Why do Romans speak Latin? Why are those words different?
It's a really good question that I hadn't even considered. Why is it called Latin, not Roman?
So Latium was the ancient region in which Rome stood. It covered Rome and the lower Tiber area, and the people of Latium were the Latins, and Latin was their language. And modern Italians still call the region, I believe, Lazio. Rome began as a Latin city, though Roman rule later carried Latin across all of Europe and North Africa and even parts of Western Asia. So Latin is the language word. Latium is the place word. Latin, Latinus, means of Latium. And then it also means the language word too. So in English, Latin appears in Old English, meaning like in Latin as a noun for the language of the Romans, and Rome as a political and civic label spread separately.
And that word Lazio will have rung bells with football / soccer fans. Be aware of the football team called Lazio as well. But then we also talk about Latinate languages, descendants of Latin, and we sometimes call those Romance languages. What are we getting at with that?
English borrowed the word romance from Old French, which meant even in late Latin, in the Roman manner. So this is not in the time of the Romans. This is post-Rome, people talking about things that were supposedly related to Rome. And in some cases, that's true. Like Romance languages are indeed from Rome or adapted from Latin. But then novels and things are sort of are called romances originally, and that's sort of a broad application of storytelling that celebrates the classics but may or may not have that much to do with them.
And we should nip it in the bud and say English is not a romance language, despite the fact I've already said that more than half of its vocabulary can be traced back to Latin. It is itself not a romance language, but nevertheless we do have all of these Latin derived or directly pilfered words. And it's all kinds of interesting reasons for that go back even further than the English language itself, because the English language is born already containing some Latin words. What do I mean by that? What I mean is the dialects that have brought over to Britain by the Angles, the Saxons, the Jutes, these Germanic language speaking speakers, their languages, their dialects already had some Latin words in them. Why? Because they met the Romans. The Romans were hanging around everywhere. They got everywhere. Mm-hmm. And they brought with them, for example, their wine. We get our word wine from the Romans before the English language really exists, because the English language exists once we're in Britain and those dialects start to merge with one another. And cheese as well. We get cheese from them. They were living the good life. They gave us wine and cheese. English has always had wine and cheese at its disposal. Lots of other words like mile. Mile has been in English for a long time, and it's from mille passus, which means 1,000 paces, because a Roman mile was 1,000 paces long. Our word camp, although specifically in the usage of a battle, We don't really use it that much like that, but that does come from Latin on the continent before it comes over here. Well, it's related to the German word Kampf, famously in the title of a book by a certain Mr. Hitler.
But also like a campaign and a champion, right?
Yeah. We adopt those words a bit later on from French, but they're related to them, where we're just borrowing the same words again and again and again sometimes.
Loads of doublets here.
Yeah, absolutely tons of them. Some more words that we adopted before English was English. Street, of course, which is from strata, which does mean straight. You would have a via strata, which would be a straight road. So when we say street, we are actually saying straight, essentially, which is funny because we also talk about a straight as well.
Yes, indeed.
Wall from Latin valum or wallum, because we've got to remember that in classical Latin, you're supposed to pronounce these as W's and C's as K sounds rather than S sounds. But then you get ecclesiastical Latin, where you pronounce them more like they look to us, with V and S sounds instead.
The one I hear about a lot is castle.
Ooh.
Originally from Latin castellum, which is a castle or a fort or a stronghold that came into relatively late Old English from usually biblical usage for some of these too.
That's right. And then we end up borrowing it again from the Normans in the form of chateau.
Yes.
As well. Actually, I think that might be even later than the Normans that we get chateau, because it looks almost a bit too perfectly French, doesn't it? I guess it's probably a bit later than the Normans. Once English has been established and the Anglo-Saxons are hanging out in Britain, you have Christian missionaries arriving from Ireland and from Rome, bringing yet more Latin vocabulary with them, because that's just the holy language then. And so we get all of these words associated with Christianity from Latin starting to flood in. Words like altar, which is from the Latin altare. What's interesting about this is, I think it's reasonable to assume that the word altar comes from altus, meaning high. Like when we talk about altitude, you think, oh, maybe this is some sort of high platform. But it's actually thought that it doesn't come from that. It comes from adolere, which means to burn, which is the sort of thing you would do at an altar rather than a description of the sort of physical height of the altar. Because it's where you would, carry out ritualistic sacrifices. You'd set things on fire.
Excellent.
But we get angel as well during this time. The word shrine as well is from Latin scrinium, which is originally a sort of chest. And then it becomes a chest containing a relic, for example, the body parts of some saint or whatever. And then it becomes, a place, a venerated place in itself. And temple as well. Or enter English having been brought by Christian missionaries to the Anglo-Saxons as they tried to convert them, which they successfully did.
Another one that I've heard about is pillow.
Pillow?
Yeah, pillow. Maybe introduced to other Germanic languages first, but it's ultimately from Latin pulvinus, meaning little cushion or small pillow.
Do you not find it hard to imagine people using pillows back then?
Yeah, right. No comfy for you.
Yeah, exactly. You're supposed to be miserable lying on, at best, a bed of hay.
Yeah, right.
But by no means is your head supposed to be elevated in any ergonomically helpful way. Oh, well, good for them. We talked a lot about just straight up words from Latin. But a lot of the time we're using Latin elements in words, aren't we? And sometimes the same Latin element in multiple words that without it being very clear. This is something that shed loads about, because you always impress me with this sort of stuff. Can you tell me about a few more of these like all-purpose Latin roots?
I mean, I feel like the most obvious and exciting one, which I may have mentioned before because it's one of my favorites, but it's probably via, the word for road.
I'm just remembering that I just said via stratum, but I should have said via stratum, right? Technically, should I?
Well, if you're speaking classical Latin, then yeah.
I was speaking ecclesiastical Latin.
You were speaking ecclesiastical Latin.
I didn't study Latin, by the way. I feel I should point this out. I didn't go to that kind of school.
Okay. It's been a long time for me. I think I only did it in junior high, but the roots end up coming up a lot. And it's also a thing. So lately I've been doing more etymology for kids. Like lately I did a workshop at a school for fifth graders. I get asked a lot by adults and pedagogical folks how you would teach kids etymology in a fun way that doesn't make them fall asleep. And I actually love doing Latin roots with kids because they're so good at it. And I taught this class in New York not that long ago. It was a group of fifth graders. I gave them a list of words with the same root and I asked them what the words meant. And the words were eloquent, loquacious, grandiloquent, soliloquy, and somniloquy. And it was cool because they knew eloquent and some of them knew soliloquy. And from there, they guessed loquacious and they didn't know grandiloquent or somniloquy. But at that point, I asked them to guess what the root of the word meant and they all got to talk or to speak. So I asked them grandiloquent first. What does grand mean? It means big. So they got to grandiloquent, big talking. And then for somniloquy, that was the last one, I asked them what insomnia meant and they got it there. That's not surprising to our listeners, I think, but it is a fun way that you can, if this interests you and your kids, that can be a fun way to do that.
Because you wouldn't necessarily spot the common element in those words, would you, until you started to pull them apart?
Right. You know it, but you don't think about it until you're using it. But I was talking about the word via, which in Latin was via, and it's a word meaning way, road, path, or can mean channel or course. But the way it shows up in the middle of our words, it hides it. Like if something is obvious, it's clear and easy to see. So easy that you might figuratively trip over it because obvious literally means in the way or in front of you on the path or road. And then impervious, im, not per, through, via, road, way. So it's literally something that is resistant to attack because there's no way through it.
Brilliant.
That's so much fun. And then previously occurs earlier on your route or path. To deviate is to stray away from the course, and to be devious or deviant is to stray from the moral path. A voyage, which we know is pretty well, that one has our French influence in it, but it's from viaticum, meaning a journey. And then convey is to carry something with you along a road. An envoy is someone sent somewhere to represent someone else. It's also related to the word invoice, which you use to request that someone send along a payment, which is fun.
Oh, that's brilliant. So there's no voice in invoice.
right. No voice in invoice, but there is a road in it. My favorite, though, is trivia, which is three roads, a place where three roads meet, which is the Roman Empire was famously connected by big, awesome public roads, many of which are still there. But the intersections of those roads, especially three or more, were gathering places for people to meet and hang out and trade goods and news. So the crossroads became known as a commons, where inconsequential and then the notion of trivial things were said and done. And then a bunch of people are going to jump in and be like, but what about the trivium, which is a term from classical education representing the three arts of grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And those were the fundamental areas of study before students began studying more advanced topics in the quadrivium. That would be arithmetic, astronomy, music, and geometry. And that's the older of the two terms coined by like medieval philosophers. But the idea of grouping these disciplines has been used a long time before that and does date back to Rome and Greece even. So trivium was coined a little bit later during the Carolingian Renaissance, and that's our liberal arts of today were based on the trivium. But trivia wasn't a common word for a fun fact until 1902, when a book series called Trivia was published by Logan Pearsall Smith, and he was known for his clever sayings and his essays, and his trivia books were full of little interesting observations about public life and human behavior, like what you might observe people talking about on the street.
Okay. But when we describe something as trivial, we're talking about it being the sort of nonsense that the Romans might have spoken at one of these meeting points of three roads.
Discussion of commoners, street talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
That is very cool, Jess. That is very cool. God, you took us to so many places with just those three letters of via. That's incredible.
I love this stuff. I mean, it's also like there are a lot more obvious ones as well, like the word pendere, meaning to hang. And once you expend a little energy pondering etymology, you earn a propensity for recognizing recognizing that this compendium of words depends on one another, sort of a pendulum, like a suspension bridge. It's a little perpendicular too, and your penchant for recognizing those connections leaves your friends and colleagues in impending suspense that they can depend upon you for a dispensation of knowledge. It makes you pensive, like you're compensating for something too.
Wait, hold on. Pensive? So is in the idea of thinking has got the same origin as pendulum?
Ah.
Oh, wow.
That was 14 words from Pendere.
So thinking is in, like, is that what that is? To think is to pendulate. That's from pensare, isn't it? It's not from pendere.
It's from pensare, which means weigh or consider, which is the frequentative case of pendere.
There we go. So it is that. Okay. So it's like yes. You've got something ticking in your head.
Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah. Well, it's more hanging. Like it's something thoughts is hanging upon your mind. Yeah.
That's brilliant. That is fantastic. And my favorite one in there was ponder was in there as well. That was a good one. What is that? I mean, is that just like a weird... We've spelt it like a French person might say it, right?
May be the case. So let me double check that one.
It's an interesting one. It is. Ponder. Yeah.
And then Latin had ponderare, which meant to weigh, and it's from the genitive version of pendere.
Right, because talking about the origin of the word pound, right, is from libra pondo. Pondo being
all of
weight,
these weighty, right. Heavy, hangy things.
And they're related to. Oh gosh. How can all these, I mean, this is massive. Are there only three Latin words? And we're just repurposing them in a million different ways. This is incredible.
There are tons of them like this. I mean, tenere is another big one. Like it's in maintain, abstain, entertain, obtain, detain. All of these meaning to hold, basically.
Yeah.
I like maintain, to hold in the hand. A lot of this stuff is just way more literal than you think it is, too. Like, we have English equivalents for all of these, but they mean the same thing. Like,
historically, we've been much more okay with building Latin compounds than with building English ones because they seem so darn obvious. So,
highfalutin.
Like, they seem a bit base, yeah. Well, this is one of the things that we should mention about Latin words is
class.
We will often take... Well, there's always, it's always like a sort of three-layer thing sometimes where you take sort of the old English as the most basic reference to it, a French as a slightly fancier reference, and a Latin word as an even more fancy reference. But, you know, in a lot of medical situations, you can talk about your heart, which is an old English word. But if you want to be taken seriously, you talk about your, you know, cardiovascular system rather than your heart and vein system. It just has more weight. Why do we do that? Why do we do that? I was pondering this so pensively because it's quite a weighty question, I think. one of the reasons, or at least one of the positive side effects of using Latin is at least that no living language has ownership of these things, right? So it does mean that, you know, in a German hospital, they might be using similar words to... Although I've talked in the past about how I wish German would use a few more Latin words to obscure their rather blatant descriptions of certain body parts. It can be quite unpleasant. Do we need to talk about the Muttermund again? We should mention that there was a backlash against all of the classical terms borrowed into English during the Renaissance through art and science, etc. Words like demonstrate, illustrate, mm-hmm. encyclopedia, temperature. I mean, we take demonstrate, illustrate, particularly temperature, these words are so much for granted, but there was a whole movement that was really irritated by us taking on these classical words rather than trying to just create alternatives from the elements that we already had in English. This is called the Inkhorn Controversy. Jess knows full well about this.
It's very fun.
Why it was called Inkhorn isn't exactly settled, but perhaps because these words are all quite long and you would require... An inkhorn is what you dip your quill in to fill it with ink, right? And so maybe you're having to go back and dip quite a lot of times to write out these long words. That's one of the possible explanations for it. But one of the proponents of this movement was a guy called Sir John Cheek, who wrote a whole version of the... Gospel of, I'm trying to remember who it was. It was the Gospel according to Matthew, he wrote. And he wrote it where none of the borrowed words that he thought were excessive.
So plenty of other borrowed words.
I mean, yeah, they're just in there. He's not perfectly got rid of them all, but he does use hundreder instead of centurion when talking about Romans.
Oh, and that's cool.
Yeah, he describes Jesus as having been crossed rather than crucified. It's not helpful, is it?
That sounds like a euphemism, honestly.
Yeah, it's not right, is it? Because you can cross someone as well in a different way. I don't know if you could at the time. I was having a look through this. I think I might have it open on my computer somewhere. Hold on. Yeah, here's a little bit of him. Jacob begot Joseph, Mary's house bond, on whom Jesus was born, who was called Christi. Therefore, from David unto Abraham there were 14 degrees, and from David unto the outpeopling to Babylon, 14 degrees. Yeah, and from the outpeopling to Babylon unto Christ. And then he uses a load of Roman numerals, the hypocrite.
Outpeopling isn't Exodus, a shorter word than any other word that we would use for that. What is that, like diaspora or something like that? Like,
I mean, I think it's the Exodus, isn't it?
Is
it
Okay, that makes sense. But that is not a shorter word.
Like, would he have called the book of the Bible outpeopling? Maybe he would. He didn't finish his entire version of the Bible, but that's just. I literally just started reading there and we came up with a slightly mad usage.
I've mentioned him before, but I like William Barnes' Germanic terms more. He has like star lore instead of astronomy and bird lore instead of ornithology. And I mentioned grandiloquent. He has high talking for that one, which is nice.
That's nice. Another one that was preferred was witcraft over knowledge.
Oh, I like that. That's quite nice.
Mm-hmm. I like witcraft. Some of them are pretty good, but not all of these inkhorn alternatives were thrown out. Some of them really did catch on. But many more of the Latin and Greek terms did stay with us.
Wait, why do we have witcraft instead of knowledge if no is a Germanic term?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question, is it? Maybe it wasn't, what was he using it for then if it wasn't for knowledge? Yeah, you're right, because that obviously is Germanic, at least the start of it, isn't it?
That just sounds like a more romantic word
logic.
For knowledge.
It was for logic.
Oh, okay, yeah, that makes more sense.
For logic. That's a good spot, Jess. 100 points for that one. Yeah, it was logic.
And that makes more sense too, because like logos for logic is reason or idea. That seems to be a more one-to-one with the original meaning of wit.
And reason and idea are both French words, so you can't have those. So yeah, you have to go back to witcraft. Yeah, good shout. Good spot. We just had to take a little break there because my daughter came in the room because I'm not in my usual filming location, if anyone hasn't noticed.
Yes, where are you?
I am in Edinburgh because I've been doing Rob Words Live. I'm now using one of my own flyers as a placemat for my cup of coffee because I've got quite a lot of them. But yes, I've got another four shows left, but by the time this goes out, I will have completed them all. But I've had a smashing time doing Rob Words Live here. Yeah, lots of friendly fans have come up. Lots of people said they're fans of you as well, Jess.
Aww. Hello, everyone. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's nice. I'm so happy you've been having a good time.
I have. My nerves have been all over the place, but it has been an incredible experience. The festival here is unbelievable. Thousands of performers here. Every pub is turned into a venue. They've all got like a number attached to the outside that says, you know, Edinburgh Fringe Venue number 263 or whatever. You just go in there, see what's going on. Sometimes it'll be something a bit rubbish. Sometimes it'll be something surprisingly incredible. At the absolute blast.
I think our listeners probably would be surprised to learn that you have as much stage fright as you do, because especially when you're on stage, you're a natural. Like it looks effortless. But I have also seen you right before you went on stage, and you looked like you might puke.
You were with me the day before I went on stage in London, and you had to keep me very grounded. There were points where I could just tell you were just trying to distract me from my own thoughts.
Squirrel. You were lovely.
I mean, it was great to have my hype man there, Jess Ferris. I've missed you here.
Wish I was there.
Anyway, enough about me. Let's get back to the Latin. We both did a bit of research into prefixes and suffixes because we use them. We add them to words that shouldn't have them, actually. But tell us about some of them.
Yeah, okay. So the high yield prefixes from Latin shouldn't be surprising. It's like ad con slash com d x in sub re trans, etc. Like this is basic stuff. We can probably guess all of these things. The cool bits, I think, come when they change. We've got these two things that happen called assimilation and dissimilation. One is when you smash, like if you take the prefix sub and you smash it onto a word that begins with like C or F or there's a whole mess of them, then that B changes to look like the rest of the word, like suspect is sub and specere, meaning like to be under observation. And then another one is succeed, where the sub and then sedere, meaning come after. So that's a bit fun. And then dissimilation is
suffuse.
When...
suffuse.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to think about this.
Yeah, fuse. Exactly. Suffer, that's a cool one. To be under a burden, to ferre, meaning to carry. That's a cool one.
Very good.
Dissimilation, this is a little more rare, but it's when the prefix or a word segment starts to look different so that you don't end up repeating a sound. And that's a little bit fun too.
And also, we have to bear in mind that we have these prefixes repeated sometimes in the French words that we incorporate as well. For example, we have lots of words with dis at the start of them, which are the Latin prefix, meaning... not or away, because it can sometimes be like to distribute is essentially to tribute away or broadly or something like that. But then you have French words that begin with de, for example, or de or des, that are actually using essentially the same Latin prefix. It's just gone through a French filter.
I mentioned obvious earlier, but ob does a lot of work in English and it has some really fun results like oblivio. And oblivion, that literally means forgetfulness. The idea of sending something into oblivion means sending it into a state of empty nothingness, wiping it away completely. That's a similar idea to obliterate, which means to erase or blot out writing. That element there is litera. Obnoxious means toward noxa, which in this case means hurt or injury. It means annoying now, but the Latin predecessor was more intense. It meant injurious or hurtful. So obnoxious is a lot softer now than it was in Latin.
In a recent episode about magic, we talked about the word occult as well.
Yeah.
And the O at the start of that is actually an ob, isn't
assimilated.
It? So is that an assimilation?
Yes,
there we go.
That's one of our assimilations.
Fantastic.
Another cool one is obfuscate, which breaks down into ob. And here it means like in front of or before. And the fuscare means to make something dark. And same with obscure. Scurus means covered. And we also see that in chiaroscuro from our art episode, which means bright dark, which is fun. And one you might not know is obambulation, which means to walk around.
very good. And then we're back to what was it?
Somnambulation is what you're thinking.
I'm getting
of
somnambulation. Which is, yeah. I'm confusing this too.
Sleepwalking.
Sleepwalking. There we go. Okay.
This is a dreamy episode.
It's all quite spacey stuff. It's all really fundamental to English, weirdly, despite English not being a Latin language. It's so fundamental that we do feel like we can slap Latin suffixes onto what we could call natively English words. For example, we don't feel at all strange about putting able or ible at the end of a Germanic root. For example, visible, portable, they are Romance words, but watchable, winnable, or knowable, that's putting a Latin suffix onto a Germanic stem, which is something we don't think about as being odd, but actually it is. We're creating hybrid words. Same if we just put ify at the end of, as in ify, at the end of something that is actually a Germanic noun, for example.
To your point, we end up with a bunch of extra words that are Latin derived because people have tried to avoid hybrid words in the past. Like, for example, the word interplanetary is a hybrid word, inter from Latin and planet from Greek. But in the 18th century, there was a non-hybrid word created, intermundane, with mundane meaning worldly.
But what is interesting, I think, is that even though I did just give those examples of winnable, watchable, etc., we actually find ourselves not even in, you know, knowingly putting Latin prefixes and suffixes, coining new words, and actually getting it right, so to speak, in that we do end up putting them on Latinate or Romance stems, because sometimes it does just sound odd to put it on a Germanic word. So generally we do get it right, which is kind of cool, because you cannot understand, have any even basic understanding of where these words have come from. But sometimes some elements just don't fit together like a jigsaw.
Well, my two favorites are, we say darkness and happiness because darkity and happity would sound stupid.
That's exactly what I was getting at, Jess. Exactly what I was getting at. Can I talk a little bit about plural endings?
Yeah, let's do it.
Because I thought I should get my head around these, because they're a thing, aren't they? I talked in a recent episode about how, where possible, we were talking about octopus and the constant problem of knowing how to pluralize that. Yeah, let's just write that. That's what it should be based on Greek, but also that word did not exist in Greek. So if you're saying octopi, you could sort of be correct based on Latin, but actually not, because that's not how it would be pluralized in Latin. Best to go with octopuses.
It's a many-legged discussion.
Exactly. But I thought I would finally try and get my head around it. So I did do a bit of research into Latin plurals, and it's nowhere near as straightforward as we've got it in our heads. The idea that a Latin noun that in the singular ends with us becomes an I at the end of it is just not true. It is true of like oculus, alumnus, stimulus do become oculi, alumni, and stimuli, but it would not be right to pluralize prospectus as prospecti, or status as stati, or apparatus as apparati. Their Latin plurals are prospectus, status, and apparatus. They stay the same. So in all those cases, we tend to put just an English ending on the end of them, apart from, so we would say prospectuses and statuses, but in some circles you would say apparatus as the plural, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, I guess you could say apparatuses. It sounds a bit odd.
This has to do with declensions, I believe, like second declension nouns take X ending and such.
Yeah, exactly. There are categories going on based upon usage, who's having what happened to whom, for example. This is before you even get into gender, etc. So I was looking up a few more of these that sort of break the rules that we think are rules. For example, the Latin for body is corpus, but the plural of corpus is not corpi, it is corpora. Meanwhile, yeah, the Latin for hand is manus, but the plural is not mani, it's just manus as well. So these things aren't so obvious, but they're not the only ones, are they? The us to the I endings. We also have the ones that end with a, and then we put an e on the end of them to make a or I, depending on how you prefer to pronounce it. One of those is correct, but let's not get into it. What are good examples of these? Alga and algae, for example. The singular of algae is an alga. But what's interesting about that one is we don't have an English plural for that. We always say algae. Mm-hmm. No one ever says algas. It would sound really weird to do that.
When we say algae or algae, we can also use that singularly, right? Is that what you're getting at? Like, this algae in my hand is many algae, but...
This is a whole extra thing, isn't it? The fact that we very rarely talk about an agendum. We can do if we want, but we will use the word agenda, which is a plural word, as a singular. No problem. Can you pass me the agenda? Oh, I have an agenda. I really, that should not make grammatical sense, but it does, because that's how we're using it, because we're not actually speaking Latin. are we? We're speaking English. And that's how we decided to use that word.
I had to look that one up because I didn't know the root of it. It's agere, meaning to do. So an agenda is literally things to be done, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, it's like to act, isn't it? Yeah, actions, quite literally.
And originally it was like a theological thing. There were again agenda and credenda, so things to be believed and things to be done.
In a previous episode, we talked about the fact that the word act, or even actor and agent, both come from that same Latin root, meaning
doers.
To do something. So an actor and an agent, that relationship is two people doing the same thing, essentially.
Just
one
doing.
Of them being on the stage and one of them doing it on behalf of the other person. Yeah, exactly. Other ones that have Latin plurals, but we never use them. Bonus, we only ever say bonuses. And viruses, we only ever say viruses. And campus, we don't ever use campuses. So there's somewhere we haven't bothered to take on a Latin plural. Point is, don't assume if it ends with us that it pluralizes in Latin to I, because it turns out it doesn't necessarily.
That is good to know.
Okay, I think we're getting towards the end, Jess, but you want to tell us about some of the aspects of Latin culture that echo through some reasonably mundane words that we still use?
Yeah, there are some words that are basically Latin words that we use for other modern things now that had sort of a different meaning, like the word janitor, for example. In Latin was a doorkeeper or a porter, and it's related to Janus, the two-faced god of doorways, which is really cool.
After whom January is named. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So our janitors are also two-faced gods, which is cool. But they're specifically doorkeepers and porters, and eventually that became an usher in a school, someone who watches the door in a school, and then it became someone who's a caretaker. By the 1700s. Oh. Another interesting one here is the word arena originally meant a sandy place. The exact root of it isn't known. It might even be Etruscan, but it's because Roman amphitheaters were strewn with sand to soak up the blood in some cases. But this everything that we call an arena now is a sandy place, which is fun.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Have we mentioned dismal before?
I don't recall what was interesting about it if we did.
Well, we're going to talk about dismal now. So dismal is from, and this is another one of our extremely useful and productive roots in English from Latin. It's from the medieval Latin phrase dies mali, meaning evil or unlucky days. And they were also called Egyptian days or dies eager. So that would be days of illness or dies maledicti, which is cursed days. And medieval calendars noted two unlucky days every single month. So January 1st and 25th, February 4th and 26th, and so on. They're earlier in the month and later in the month. And they were called Egyptian days because they were supposedly calculated by ancient Egyptian scholars or potentially affiliated with the story of the plagues, but the earliest known reference to them is in the works of a 4th century Roman scribe, Furius Dionysius Philocallus. And they are detailed in a bunch of medieval texts and calendars, including in the works of the Venerable Bede later on. So the dies mali then came to mean any day marked by disaster or gloom, eventually, or even like the days of your old age. So in English, the first version of this word was in the phrase in the dismal. So it was a noun, meaning during the days of misfortune. Mm. And then it shifted to the adjective in the phrase dismal day, which is funny because it's a pleonasm or a tautology. It's literally a bad day, which, okay.
Right.
One thing that I said here, I really need you to appreciate because I just noticed this today, is that the original Roman work in which these dates were referenced are called the Fasti, which are calendar lists of official and religiously sanctioned events and like days you're allowed to do official business and whatnot. And you had to do that on dies Fasti, which is the allowed days. So I also just think it's funny that we find this reference in a work by Furius Dionysius Philocallus, and it's the Fasti of Furius. Not burning into this, but it cracked me up.
I think we're pretty much done, aren't we then? test.
I'm gonna say one more little bit of things. I mentioned that dies is an extremely productive root in English as well, right? And we've talked about this in diary and journal, right? Which are doublets, which I think you have mentioned in particular on a previous episode. Diary is originally meant lasting one day, and it's related to this. And then journal is the word diurnal, but like squidged through French. But I wanted to come back to the fact that I mentioned, I teased the idea of dissimilation earlier, and that's in this related word meridian, which in English originally meant noon or midday, and poets and such also sometimes use the term night's meridian to mean midnight. And the original phrase here is medidie or midday, but later in Latin it became meridie, which is considered an example of dissimilation. We didn't like medidie, so it became meridie.
We can't do that. You can't just turn a D into an R because you don't like the sound of it.
Apparently we can.
I can get it with the other ones where it's helping you get from one vowel sound to another, but I'm not having just... There's nothing... We're doing the same... All right, fine. I hold my hands up.
Anyway, it's in a ton of other words too, like... But it's great.
This has been fascinating and at times mind-blowing.
Dizzying even. We've discussed Latin ad nauseum, I think, so perhaps.
Yeah. Oh, man, we didn't even get into those. Those are for another time. Actually, we did an episode where we talked about legal terms, I think. There was quite a lot of legal Latin in there, if that's the sort of stuff you're also into. Thanks a lot for this one, Jess. Thank you to you for watching, and we'll catch you in the next Words Unraveled.
See you then.